800-878-PLAY, 800-878-7529. Call us. We'll even send you a little gift certificate from Tickets Now as a way of thanking you for being part of this discussion about money and sports. We're talking with Fred Eng from the National Alliance for Youth Sports and Dr. Andrew Jacobs, who's been with us many times before. Here's another quote, the end of that quote, from Larry Weissman.
Nick loves something more than coaching, and it's money. And that's what this came down to. That's what it was all about. You know, I don't want to sit in judgment or anything, but if he told me it was raining, I'm pretty sure I would stand out there until I was soaking wet before I took his word for it.
Well, there's more than a little bit of sarcasm and more than a little bit of anger in Larry Weissman from USA Today's voice there. And, Fred, it's the fact that the reporters that see these coaches again and again repeat that they have no interest in some other opportunity. Why don't they just say, I won't talk about it, I can't talk about it, I have a commitment now, we'll talk after the season and leave it at that. That's the same dilemma that Bill Cowher was facing the last 6 weeks of this season.
Well, it's like the old saying, you know, walk a mile in my shoes before you start to abuse. And I think that that's what happened in Saban's case in the last comment of the guy saying there. How do we know what he really thinks? Is money really the thing that turns him on? I don't think it is personally. I think it's his real love of coaching college kids. And he found out that he made a big mistake. And, hey, like I say, Alabama offered him all of this money. What's he supposed to do? Turn it down and say no?
And guarantee, too.
And a guarantee, absolutely. What is he, crazy, going to turn it down? I'm saying that we can't judge other people like we judge ourselves. And therefore, let him do what he's going to do and just move on in the professional ranks.
Okay, here's my Pollyanna response, which is, if this is going to continue to happen, wouldn't it be nice one time for the university to say, you know what, we're taking him away from his responsibility. In addition to the money we're paying him, we are going to add 10% of that money in his contract will be donated to helping needy students, student-athletes that may not get a scholarship but can help them. Something like that, that shows that at least at some level they understand the education of them as complete people is more important.
Man, go ahead, Andy, but it sure sounds like a great plan to me.
Why don't they do that? I've never heard of that, and I'm going to start saying, I want to hear one of these coaches that signs these contracts, and with Lee Steinberg and some of the other agents in the NFL in the mid-early 80s started to say that. I want to hear this more, not just from the athletes, but from the coaches as well. Maybe it's not 50%. Maybe you can call it tithing if you want. I don't care. It's also something that helps the university preserve some sense that they have balanced values.
Well, I think, Nick, you're bringing up an excellent point, and yet at the same time, it is something that I hear once in a while professional athletes are doing with their contracts. I hear every once in a while of an athlete who will sign a contract and say, I'm going to donate a portion of this to my college or my alma mater to help out the program. And so I think, you know, it would be an excellent opportunity for a coach to tie into the university, not just in terms of financially for himself, but to show that he's dedicated to really helping the community. I mean, I don't know how much this is a $32 million contract, if I'm correct?
Guaranteed for 8 years.
Oh, okay, well, you know,
plus
I don't know.
Plus bonuses if he makes the Bulls.
Okay. I mean, I don't know how much money Nick Saban needs to live on, but I would imagine it's probably not $32 million. So what you're saying makes a lot of sense. At the same time, you know, I think you have to look at this from the perspective of the university. If the university is willing to pay him that much money, why won't they go out and make the effort with underprivileged kids? And why won't
they start to make it? That's my point, that the university negotiates that as a policy, the NCAA starts saying, you know what, if you're going to give these big contracts, we want to see you begin to devote a 10% of these salaries to your coaches to making sure your athletes get an education, that they're prepared for the world, so they don't end up like Tank Johnson with 500 rounds of bullets in, you know, and ammunition in their house and all these different guns, or Maurice Claret, that they have a sense that somebody made the attempt again and again and again to reach them. Ultimately, the individual has to take responsibility. I understand that. But too many of these programs don't see the big picture and certainly don't help their athletes see
the
big picture.
Let me ask you this, Nick. Okay, you graduate from Dartmouth. I went to Vanderbilt, obviously very high-profile schools academically. Why do you think, from your perspective, a lot of these programs do not do this? Why do they not do this? Why do the Michigans or the Ohio States or the USC, or maybe they do for all we know, but why do you think a lot of these schools don't do it?
Well, they can get lost in the fog of the competitive war, the money for the BCS, the money for the NCAA, and that's the problem, that they change conferences. There's been a Wild West mentality where colleges change conferences all the time, and they can hide behind the lack of clarity there. And that's where the NCAA, I don't care what they say, if they don't do more, they're doing things, but they're not being effective to call out those that are doing it right and to make sure they call out those that aren't doing enough. And if they don't do that, if they spend their time saying, well, fine, the salaries are the biggest issue, then they also need to say, how do we get back to this notion that we make sure there's no chance that an athlete does not have the support academically and emotionally to make sure they become full prepared citizens.
And you know why that happens? It's not the university that's making this happen. It's the boosters clubs. That's where all the money comes from. And you look in Alabama and you think the university, the media makes it portrayed as the university is coming up with all this money. But behind the scenes, it's the boosters clubs with their millions and millions of dollars from the alumni. How else are they going to get that money, and how else are the university going to justify it? So the booster clubs go out and say, get us anybody that you can. We'll provide the money to do it. But what you're talking about, Nick, is the ethics and standards of universities to be able to justify what they're doing here in taking a coach and bringing them in and doing that. You're so right on with the idea that, all right, give the excess money, wherever it is, give it to worthy causes, and then maybe we'll let you off the hook.
Well, let's look at also what's happening. Roy Williams, one of the best coaches in college basketball, yet when he leaves, there are accusations that there were some things going on with the booster club that allowed for athletes sort of after their educations to get some money. I'm not sure that's all bad, frankly. That's just my opinion. Oklahoma, you had that car dealership deal with the quarterback who missed the year. Maurice Claret, another exaggerated example of this whole process. So the booster clubs are a big part of that, and they aren't held accountable. Maybe that's part of the issue then, is how do we require them to be part of this, that they essentially become educational components of the university. And if they're not willing to do that, then there has to be some stipulation that they keep themselves at arm's length.
Well, you know, you look at the University of Florida, where I am, and tell me all the money that is raised in the focus of football coming up at the national championship here. I mean, all of that is part of a university system. Is the weirdest thing to me that all of this money is being raised in football, and yet for education, I don't think so.
Here's one more quote from our buddy Solomon Wilcots.
Got a lot of players to play hard for him. Those guys who kind of hung in there through tough and difficult times. A couple of years ago, remember when they fired Dave Wannstedt middle of the year? Jim Bates was a guy that many of the players wanted to see stay, and only a charismatic force like Nick Saban allowed the players to move on from their loyalty to Jim Bates to sign up to play for Nick Saban. So they thought he was their guy, but as it turns out, he's disappointed, I think, not only the players, not only the fans there in Miami, everyone within the organization, and even the owner, Wayne Huizing. He's left a lot of people very disappointed who really supported him and laid it on the line for him.
So, okay, getting back to this is, let's start anticipating. Who's the next Nick Saban out there?
That's a great question. Bobby Petrino, you mean to be able to do what he's done? But there are hundreds in line. My point is, anytime you bring that college coach directly into the professional level, it's going to be a problem. And I think if we look back in history, we'll see it.
Dr. Jacobs, you've been quiet for a while. Let's look into the components of the recruiting process. When you in Kansas City have worked with athletes, parents today are putting more and more pressure on their kids to realize that this work they're doing when they're 12 and 13 and 14 as prime athletes, that it's going to end up with a scholarship. How often do you see that?
It doesn't happen nearly as often as parents think, Nick. The problem is, you know, and Fred knows this as well as anybody does, there's all this pressure on young kids today to play sports and to be really, really good at a young age. And parents start to get the idea that their kids are good enough to get a scholarship. They'll start spending all this money on private lessons, going to nutritionists, psychologists, personal trainers, and that oftentimes it doesn't work out. And the statistics show that the percentage of kids who play sports at an early age, and Fred, you probably know what this is, the percentage of sports who play kids who play sports at 8, by the time they're 16, it's dwindled down dramatically. And there are a lot of reasons why. But I think what happens is there's this pressure that parents think they're, you know, everybody thinks their kid's going to be, you know, look at Earl Woods and Tiger Woods. He was on The Tonight Show when he was 3 or 4, and now he's the greatest golfer of modern time. Well, you know, a lot of people see that and think that can happen to their son or daughter.
Well, you know what I think is interesting is you talk about recruiting in Florida here. The legislature in Florida created what is called a student-athlete recruiting task force, and they were to study recruiting. Now, you would think it would be that it's dealing specifically with recruiting high school athletes to go into the pros. What this is about more so is recruiting athletes from one school to the other, and that becomes a really topical subject when you talk about state championships and where did this player come from. At the high school level, is as we may know, is that coaches will go out and recruit other players to come in and live with their grandmother, live with their uncles and aunts and whatnot, so that they can be in their districts. And that kind of recruiting is a result of that we have non-educational teachers that are coaches, and we recruit anybody in off the street, former players, whatever, that want to come in and be high school coaches. They have no standards of education and what it's all about, and so therefore you have the recruiting problem.
All right, guys, well, here's my proposal, since I'm trying to make this something that we can get our teeth into. Is there, like our past interview with Dominique Dawes and Amy Mullins, is there, like there is a Women's Athletes Bill of Rights, is there a Student Athlete Bill of Rights? Could we get legislatures to require some minimal expectations from every school and from every college in terms of making sure they adhere to a Student Athlete Bill of Rights that protects their legacy as people, not just as pawns of a professional sport system?
Well, I think it has to start with the leadership, Nick. And I think what you're proposing is a great idea, but it really needs to start with the leadership. If you have coaches or you have administrators who don't back up their words, then what